You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Business of Practice podcast, where we focus on the business and human sides of equine veterinary medicine. In this episode, we're going to talk with 2026 AAEP President Dr. Sarah Roos about what she hopes to achieve during her term and what she sees as the biggest challenges for our industry. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Grice, business consultant and former equine practice owner. The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you by Care Credit. Dr. Roos graduated from the University of Pennsylvania in 2005, after which she did an internship at the Equine Medical Center of Ocala. She completed her residency in large animal internal medicine at Texas A&M University and attained board certification. After working in private practice for a time, she moved to academia. Dr. Roos spent 6 years on the faculty at the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine as a clinical assistant professor and chief of the Large Animal Medicine Service. She transitioned to industry practice in 2016 and is currently equine technical manager with Boehringer Ingelheim Animal Health and lives in Littleton, Colorado. In her free time, she enjoys hiking and traveling with her husband and showing her very handsome horse. Welcome, Dr. Roos, and congratulations on your appointment.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Grice. It's good to be here. It's still funny, actually, like hearing myself introduced as the current president.
I
got to get used to that.
And you will. When we talk at the end of the year, you'll be really used to it. It will come as no surprise. So as the AAEP president in 2026, what are you hoping to achieve with your team in the coming year?
Well, I'm glad you even said the word team, because it is definitely very much a team endeavor. AAEP recasts its strategic plan every 3 to 5-ish years or so, depending upon a little bit what's happening. And we did just recast the strategic plan for 2026 to 2028. Within there, there's our typical consistent three pillars that we're looking at being education, the profession, and the horse. And then, we have things that certainly fall under those. I think personally for me, the things that kind of excite me most about kind of some of the tactics under that strategic plan, certainly within education, the addition of the XP wet lab series to AAP, I think has been phenomenal, and it's really exciting to kind of see where those go. And I think 2026 is going to be a big year for the addition of some new topics and locations and whatnot. So I think just really trying to reach more people where they are and with the sort of content that they want, I think is going to be an exciting thing for 26 and certainly going forward. Within the pillar of the horse, really a lot of that focuses on advocacy. And we are extremely fortunate within AAP, we in 2025 hired Dr. Ashley Morgan as the Director of Equine Welfare and Advocacy. We stole her from the AVMA, where she'd been doing a lot of this work for over 15 years. So she knows all the players, she knows all the things that are happening out there. And conveniently for us, her background was as an equine veterinarian prior to going into her role with AVMA. So I think we finally have room to actually gain a lot of traction in that advocacy space and really be able to offer not necessarily solutions to every problem, but at least some toolkits and, some talking points and some contacts and some, again, kind of strategy behind how to approach whether it's, state or federal issues or discipline related issues. So, I think 26 will be another big year for there. And then, within the third pillar of the strategic plan being the profession, a lot of that is about community. And I think, for me personally, that's probably my biggest, skill, biggest thing that kind of brings brings me joy even really is bringing people together. And so I think that's something that, you know, we really would like to dive into in 2026 is, you know, AP is awesome. And how do we make everyone realize how awesome it is and feel like they have a place and that their voice is being heard and that their talents are being used. And so, you know, that engagement piece is something that I'd really like to focus on in 26.
Yeah, that's, you know, bringing people together, especially within the AAEP. You know, sometimes on Facebook, I'll see somebody post, you know, I don't know what I get from my AAEP membership. And I'm like, what? What? And I leap into action and I know all these things are getting. And all the things and it's just crazy.
It is, but it's funny because I think it's easy. Obviously, you know, you were on the board and you were an officer and I'm fortunate to be in that position now. And I think when we're in these roles, like we see all of the things.
Right.
But it's funny because even I will talk to, you know, colleagues who are pretty darn involved and pretty knowledgeable, but maybe are just, you know, busy in some other aspect, whether they're sitting for boards or something else and have maybe just lost a little bit of contact and they quickly lose sight of everything that AAP is doing. Or honestly, even people within certain committees, they know what that committee is doing, but maybe don't know everything else. And so I think it is something that we struggle with is just how to communicate all of the amazing things that we are doing. And it's almost one of those, you know, we almost have too many communication platforms now. You know, once upon a time, it was, you know, how do you get it out? Just because how do you get it out? And now it's what's the right way to get it out? Is that email? Is it podcasts? Is it social media? And so I think that is something that, you know, is a big part of that engagement strategy is also just the, how do we let our members know what we're doing and what we need from them when we do have those volunteer opportunities or we are looking for, you know, people in a certain subset that we really want their opinions? You know, how do we best reach them? And again, I wish that I could tell you that I have a magical answer for that. But it is something that we're going to really keep kind of playing with some different ways of trying to reach people, whether, again, that's texting or having some focus groups and whatnot to try and really get some of that messaging out.
Yeah, it is so hard to know what channels a particular person likes to be contacted by. And maybe that's asking individuals. Maybe that's as a part. I mean, who knows?
It won't be a one size fits all.
No, never will.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, there's some generational influence to that, but also just the, you know, are you in a role such as mine in industry where you're sitting at your computer all day? Great. Like I see emails and I see things as they come through. Certainly when you're a busy practitioner in your truck staring at your windshield, you're not going to have that same accessibility or patience to dig through emails and, you know, long lists of things that are in email. So I think it is, dividing things into different categories that we can hopefully reach everyone just in different ways.
Right. Exactly.
The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you by Care Credit. Care Credit keeps equine veterinarians at the heart of care by providing horse owners with simple, budget-friendly financing options. By helping to bridge the gap between costs and care, Care Credit supports healthy financial relationships between veterinarians and their clients. Clients have a flexible way to pay over time for all types of care, and practices get paid in 2 business days. It's a payment experience everyone can feel good about.
So as we begin 2026, what do you see as the most pressing issues facing the profession? I'll ask you for in the next decade. What do you think's out there?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of our issues will be continuation of current issues. Let's be real.
Yes.
You know, I think the, you know, recruitment and retention are going to continue to be an ongoing area of focus for us. You know, obviously, you know, the AP had the Commission on Sustainability, you know, all of the various pieces of that have essentially been sunset. But by being sunset, that's because they were put into permanent homes. Not that we were like, oh, we've transformed equine practice. We're done. It was more the, yeah, we've gotten some things started. Let's make sure that they live on and that we put them into places where they have that permanence. And so, you know, the recruitment piece, you know, certainly I think we recognize, you know, we continue need to reach out to our students, get them interested arguably, obviously, even, you know, before college, let alone before vet school. But then within vet school, you know, really make sure that we are, you know, appealing to students across a broad demographic that, you know, equine is a place for them, whether they grew up with horses or not, and give them the skills to hit the ground running. You know, I think that's one of the things that I think it's always been an issue. I mean, I remember when I was a student longer ago than I care to admit, you know, not necessarily feeling like I would be practice ready when I came out either, but we continue to hear that more and more. And I think as, you know, the, you know, educational system continues to change and whatnot, I think that there's, you know, things that even AAP can do to help those students and then those early career practitioners to feel confident. Cause I think that's a big part of, you know, where we're losing people is just, you know, some intimidation factor, or they're just not confident, therefore not charging enough, not generating enough, you know, revenue that it's a financially sustainable career for them. So I think, again, that ties into some of our educational offerings and whatnot, but how we can make our young and early career practitioners, you know, feel supported and feel practice ready. I think part of it is also that recognition that if the first job in equine, or I should even say in mixed animal, large animal, anywhere that you're seeing a horse, you're still used to us. Don't feel like you have to be 100% equine. But if that first job isn't the right fit, that doesn't mean, you know, leave veterinary medicine or leave large animal practice altogether. So, you know, kind of helping people to find the right job, whatever stage of career they might be in, whether that's early, mid, or late career, is helping people to find the right fit for them. You know, obviously, again, a lot of our focus thus far has been on the early career, but I think looking, you know, interiorly, even at myself as more of a mid-career person, you know, what are, you know, resources and things that we can do to help our mid-career folks, you know, stay happy and fulfilled. And then for our, you know, more late-term career, you know, how can we help them to, again, continue to still feel very valued and feel supported and help them to leave things even better than they found them. So I think, again, all of the recruitment retention issues will certainly continue as well. I think, you know, the other big area that certainly I see continuing to expand in the next decade is going to be, again, kind of that advocacy piece, or kind of all of the things that advocacy oversees. Obviously, the buzzword for probably what the last 2 to 3 years has been social license to operate. You know, it's interesting. You may or may not know that there's 2 volumes of the history of the AAP that have been written. And as part of my homework coming into this position, I read both volumes of them. And I learned some things that I actually found interesting and somewhat embarrassing that I only recently learned. But, you know, one of the take homes, honestly, that I got from the very origin story of the AAP is that, you know, a lot of AAP started in response to, well, the term wasn't used, but it was social license to operate. So it really was formed to help, you know, racetrack practitioners to have their voice, to, you know, support appropriate regulations and whatnot in the racing industry, because there was public scrutiny of the racing industry at that point, and veterinarians needed to have more of a role in it. And obviously, you know, that still is true in the racing industry, but is obviously true throughout all equine disciplines. And I think that social license to operate is something that, again, we as veterinarians who have, you know, taken an oath to the well-being of horses really need to have our voices as part of, because it is something that just with social media and just the visibility of, you know, you catch one video of one person doing some sort of training modality that right or wrong, taken out of context, can certainly blow up. And so I think that is certainly going to continue to be an issue for us. You know, kind of within that advocacy space as well is going to be the VCPR, so veterinary client patient relationship, and what that entails. And so certainly making sure that, you know, the practice of veterinary medicine is protected, and, you know, not because that's just, you know, a way for us to, you know, keep everything, you know, under our little umbrella and be trying to, you know, make money out of it. And yes, it certainly is important to, you know, practice revenue that veterinary procedures are being billed for and being captured by veterinarians, but because it's just the right thing for horses and horse welfare and horse health. And so I think, you know, balancing that with, there's going to be more use of technology in the next 10 years. And there's a lot of pluses to that. You know, I think virtual, you know, teleconsults and whatnot are fantastic. And there's a lot of things that we can do, you know, virtually or using artificial intelligence, you know, whether that's helping practice efficiency with, you know, voice transcription of medical records, gait analysis. You know, there's a lot of really cool uses of technology out there. But I think still making sure that at the end of the day, you know, veterinarians are putting their hands on horses and establishing that relationship is something that we're just going to have to be very intentional about making sure that that stays consistent.
Yeah, there is so much coming down the pike. There was a really interesting talk in Denver about gait analysis and the use of AI. It was fascinating. It was really fascinating and certainly game changer to have AI listening and writing your medical record. Folks, that a big pain point is writing medical records for 2 to 3 hours at the end of their day. And what a difference in their lives to have that just sort of done for them. And all they have to do is check it. Instead of actually produce it when they should be doing something more personal, like eating, sleeping, or playing with their horse or their children.
Exactly. Spending time with their family. Well, and that's, I freely admit, like, I am not smart enough to honestly understand AI and a lot of the various technologies out there. But I do think that, yeah, like, we all just need to figure out where they make sense and that, yes, they should not replace everything. And to your point, exactly, like, we still need to double check and make sure that, you know, what they are hearing and then writing, especially, you know, with veterinary lingo sometimes can be interesting. I'm sure we've all had that experience where, you know, voice texted something and only after it's sent to the horse owner did you realize what it actually typed and sent to the horse owner. So yes, there's a human component to checking it, but I think it will hopefully, you know, increase efficiency and make people's lives better.
Absolutely. And I think it has great, I think it can really help people. I think we've got that.
I think we need to not be, like
totally scared of it.
Exactly. Yeah, open, like cautious use of it. Yeah. But exactly. Not be terrified. Like, no, like it's, you know, going to take over the world, but yeah, cautious use.
So since you've got a platform today to tell us about the AAEP, what are the most important things that you would like our listeners to know about the AAEP and what it offers to members?
I just think AAEP is the best. And I mean, obviously, yes, I am a biased group in terms of saying that. But I do think the amount of things that AAEP gets done in periods of time using, you know, member volunteers is impressive. Again, when you look at some of the outputs of the Commission on Sustainability, so you get, you know, some of the practice culture handbooks that were put out and the internship portal, like, it's amazing, you know, some of those resources that can come out quickly. You know, I think, as we talked about earlier, we struggle with how to get all of those things out there in terms of all of the various benefits from AAP. You know, I would certainly just encourage people, you know, in their vast spare time to, you know, try and look at the website, emails, et cetera. But also just ask people, because we all have our little passion projects, or honestly, like I said, even anytime I talk to someone, I learn either something else that AAP is offering or some way that they have used it. So even just at, you know, a recent board meeting, people were talking about how they've used the veterinary club to save, you know, thousands of dollars on everything from FedEx to, you know, purchasing trucks. So there are so many ways to, you know, make your membership worthwhile. In addition to just being, you know, part of your professional organization, which I've kind of always been the person, I don't know, maybe I'm just a joiner, but from the time, you know, that I was in vet school, you know, I've seen myself as an AAP member. You know, I think that, again, all of the work is done by member volunteers. And I think sometimes there is this view of it being a very, like, insular club. And I think a couple things, like A, like there are hundreds of volunteers every year. So yes, maybe, you know, board members or committee chairs have a little bit more visibility because they're the ones that are quoted in things or whatnot. But that recognition that, you know, odds are, you know, anyone listening to this has, you know, a colleague or a friend or a classmate who is currently or has served on an AAP committee. So we do have lots of ways to get involved. And honestly, we are always looking at more ways. And so, you know, we recognize that essentially a 3-year committee commitment might be more than some people can bite off just because they are trying to balance a family or aging parents or just keeping their head above water within their practice. And so, you know, trying to look for more ways to get more people to feel engaged. You know, it's a good problem to have that we have more people volunteering than we currently have had places for. But I just want people to know, like, we are trying to find ways to incorporate everyone so that they feel part of it. And that recognition that it can't just be boarded specialists in large practices and in academia. You know, we really are trying to have a broader diversity of, you know, practice types, you know, age, experience, geography, whatever it might be within all of our committees and even within the leadership of our committees to make sure that we really are getting the voice of more of our members. Because we do know that, what, 60% of our members are in, you know, 2 doctor or less practices. And so we recognize, like, for that group, it's sometimes hardest to find the time to volunteer for a committee. But we are really trying to find ways that we're incorporating everyone's voice. And, you know, I've said this before, just assume positive intent. You know, no one is volunteering their time to the AAP to try and, you know, hold others down or ignore, you know, issues that are happening. You know, again, we all are kind of doing the best we can to balance these volunteer roles along with life. And so, assume positive intent. You know, if something is said or not said, you know, you feel like there's a perspective that hasn't heard, just reach out. I think, you know, any of us, you know, as officers, as board members, as staff, are always happy to hear from people and recognize if again, there's a voice or an issue that maybe we haven't, you know, necessarily heard from or, you know, addressed in a way that you feel good about. So, you know, I would just always tell people to reach out to any of us because we really, like, we all want everyone to be successful and we want the AAP to be successful and to be doing what it is designed to do, which is to, you know, further the professional development of its members.
You know, there's there's two programs that I think of that just popped into my mind that I know that there are. Some people may not know about them, even though they have been trotted out kind of front and center. One is the assistance program, which is a fabulous thing that is, you know, there for members. And I believe for anyone in members' practices, do you know the specific
for that? Yep. So the member assistance program for any AAP member and their family members. Your children, your spouse, you can use it for anyone within your family. And then within your practice, it's a very nominal fee to get your non-veterinarians onto your practice.
Very nominal, I remember.
I feel like I helped a practice to look into it and it was like $20 a year to add, you know, multiple technicians and front desk folks. So it's pretty nominal to add. And it, I will say, you know, we used it to do our wills and our medical directives. There's a lot of kind of good things in there. Obviously there's, you know, some counseling services and whatnot that are available as well. I think it is something that we do often forget about. That is an incredibly useful resource.
And just a wonderful thing to have as a part of your AAEP membership, you know, that you have access to all of those professionals to answer questions that, you know, and there's, I haven't used it, but I've sort of looked at what's available and wow. The other one is that program whose name has flown out of my mind. When people have, a client who doesn't have enough economic financial backing to say do a euthanasia or and if veterinarians sign up, there's some money available to help them with those hard luck cases. I don't remember what it's called.
Yeah, so that's the safety net program.
Okay.
Yep. And so that exactly. So to get enrolled in that, just, you know, you or a member of your practice has to go through a fairly brief enrollment. But then exactly, you can get, and I'm not going to say a number because I will say it wrong, but there is X amount of money.
I think it's up to $600.
That sounds about right. I knew it was somewhere between like $500 and $700 mm-hmm. per case. So exactly. If it's something that, you know, treatment would be reasonably inexpensive mm-hmm. with a decent prognosis. Obviously, it's not going to cover colic surgery, but maybe an enucleation, for a non-healing corneal ulcer. So if it's something like that, that an owner can't afford, the Vet Direct Safety Net will help with that. Or if it's just, you know, an animal that should be euthanized and the owner struggles mm-hmm. to do that financially and in a compassionate way, then the Vet Direct Safety Net can help with those fees too.
Yeah, and that's such a important thing, I think, too, for some of our early career veterinarians who, you know, struggle sometimes with how hard it is when maybe people can't afford to have horses, but they do have a horse. Maybe the horse has grown older with the client, and it just feels awful not to be able to help them. So here's a way that they can help them.
Yeah. And I think in doing it in a way that's helping them while not diminishing your own value. So as opposed to just saying, I'll just do it for free.
Right.
You're still showing the value and the commitment mm-hmm. to it by going through this program, but still able exactly to your point to offer that compassionate care and not feel like you have nothing to offer these people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's a terrific program too. And these are just like, there's just two examples of the wonderful stuff. It's hard to know it all. Like I don't know half the stuff. There's all these resources. You've mentioned the sustainability resources, which are fabulous, but there's also all the white papers,
the infectious disease guidelines.
Yeah. Or the one that USEF about sport horses.
Yep. Yeah. The position statements.
There's position statements, ethical statements. There's so much.
I will say the website is not great. It's getting better. I feel like we've been saying that for a while.
Saying that through the last three websites.
The one thing I will say that has been added to the website is getting back to our conversation on technology. Mm-hmm. It's called Olibot. So it's a little bot that you can ask questions and should try and help guide you to resources. So like I said, you know, you might get on the website and, you know, not immediately be able to find the EHV, you know, guidelines from the Infectious Disease Committee.
Right.
You can ask Ollie and it should get you there faster. And we've been doing a whole bunch of, you know, beta testing on it and had a bunch mm-hmm. of various committee members and staff members and whatnot playing with it. So hopefully that will also help people to find some of those resources even more quickly on the website, because it has been an issue.
Yeah. It's kind of like Googling stuff. And that became a word put in the dictionary. Yes. So maybe Ollieing will become
That's hard to say. Maybe we should come up with a better name just because that is hard. I don't know how you spell that. Ollieing.
Ollieing. Yeah. How do you spell that? Oh my goodness.
But yes, no, there are so many resources out there. And again, if it's a resource we don't have, honestly, if you ask us for it, we'll either probably direct you to it or find a committee that wants to put it together. We are a very, in general, I would say, responsive organization. And, I think I mentioned this earlier, like we are super fortunate. Like AAP has the best staff on earth.
Absolutely.
For, you know, the longevity and the best within volunteers. The AAP staff.
And, yes. And just amazing volunteers. How many people put in countless hours to just make our profession better. When you think about it, we are so incredibly lucky.
We are. I mean, even when you just look at, you know, convention, which obviously just finished, you know, the number of hours that went into mm-hmm. reviewing all of those papers and proceedings and then putting them together and, you know, being there then to moderate them and fit them all together. Yeah. We're very, very spoiled by the amount of engagement that we have from our volunteers and our staff.
Very, very. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Just that, honestly, like, this is, it's a huge honor, mildly terrifying still, but a huge honor to be in this position and recognizing, you know, the footsteps of some amazing people, you know, that have come before me that I'm now getting to walk in. And just that, you know, I take it quite seriously. And again, I want to hear from people. I may not always be able to do anything, but, you know, if there is something that comes up, certainly always feel free to reach out. You know, I think one of the things that, you know, certainly came up a little bit at convention and that I know is going to come up for me over this next year is, you know, also looking internationally. So that is one of, you know, the roles as president is to collaborate with a lot of the international equine groups and just in the conversations we have with them, you know, we are not alone in our struggles. You know, really, I think from country to country, continent to continent, you know, everyone is facing a lot of the same issues we are. But the good thing is that, again, kind of working together and collaborating, hopefully, you know, we can find some solutions or at least some tools to help everyone internationally, not just here.
Well said.
Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. Roos, for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Dr. Grice. It was a pleasure.
And thank you all for joining us for the Business of Practice podcast. And a big thanks to our sponsor, Care Credit. And to all my listeners out there, be brave, embrace change.